Today's guest, John Alcock, has succeeded big time many times. He's also failed big time. But what seemed at first like some of the worst things in his life were the things that began to wake him up. We'll learn more in just a moment. Hello, everyone. My name is Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. Today, our guest, John Alcock, is held in high regard for his work as a partner and trial lawyer with the global law firm of DLA Piper. John's professional successes have included multi-million lawsuits in favor of his clients. Mr. Alcock, welcome to Mind Talk.
Good day. How are you today?
I am doing well. You heard me describe you as having succeeded big time and also failing big time. So let's start there. Give us an example of some of your big time wins and not so much.
Well, I went to some pretty good schools, Boston College and Harvard Law School, and graduated from both of them with honors. I've been, as you noted, a lawyer at one of the largest, if not the largest, law firms in the world, and I've won my share of pretty large trials. On the other hand, I went through a pretty challenging time in my life with a divorce and other things, which actually led to the book. And I've had my share of multi-million dollar losses in trials. So like everyone, life has had some successes and life has had some challenges, let's say.
You know, for folks listening, at first blush, you went to great schools. You are working with a prestigious law firm. You hold an important position within the law firm. What could go wrong? Life for you has got to be fabulous, easygoing, and filled with riches.
Well, it's like everyone else. You can look from prints to anyone that you encounter in your daily life. No matter what successes that you get, no one comes into this life without having challenges. You're going to get sick. Ultimately, you're going to die. People that are close to you are going to die. You're going to face challenges with relationships. No one's immune from any of those things, no matter how many good things that occur in your life.
I'm wondering what you have written a book entitled 40 Things I Wish I'd Told My Kids. And I have to share with the audience the subtitle, which is Mindful Messages About Success, Happiness, Leather, Pickles, and the Use and Misuse of Imagination. What brought you to writing a book of this sort?
Well, it was in the mid-2000s, and I was going through a challenging time. I was going through a divorce and other related challenges. And I started getting interested in mindfulness as a result of that. Went to lectures, read many, many, many books, went to talks. And I have three daughters, and I wanted to let them know about some of the things that I was learning. And I couldn't find, actually, any book or even set of books that explained the notions in an easy to understand way to a Western audience. So on Father's Day of 2009 in a London hotel room, I started writing them emails. And over a year and a half period or so, they mounted to a couple hundred, actually, I think, at the end. And in the course of that, they shared some of the emails with some of their friends and their friends with their friends and parents. And somewhat of a consensus developed that I should turn these emails into a book. And so that's what happened.
Sounds like your daughters are very powerful in your life. In a good way.
Well,
The notion, you share many ideas in the book, and one of them is that people often tend to look for happiness in the wrong direction. And in fact, you say 90% of your worries are wrong. How can that be? Just as a nation, we spend so much time worrying about so much.
There's a lot of ways to answer that question. One way is our systems have somewhat of a negative bias, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's probably why we still exist as a species, because, you know, when we were cave people, and our brains and nervous systems are really not that much different than when we were cave people, having an overdose of fear was probably a very, very good thing. The chance of encountering a saber-toothed tiger was great. The chance of encountering warring tribes was great. The chance of encountering extreme danger when you went out for your daily round to try to acquire food for your family was great. And so having a system that had a high fear bias was a good idea, because if you made a small mistake, it was over for you. Our systems have that same fear bias, but our lives in 99.9% of cases of people, and virtually all people in the United States, don't face those same risks. But we apply that same system, that same fear bias, to the very, very different level of risks and unpleasantness that we encounter. And we apply the same degree of worry to them that our systems applied to much greater risks in a very different era. And so that's, I think, why we worry so much. And that's why 90%, and actually that's probably a gross understatement, some extraordinarily high percentage of the things we worry about don't deserve the attention we give them.
Well, what you're describing, though, it sounds like you're saying that essentially, I mean, it's in our DNA to worry. That was a survival tool. That was a way of being hyper alert in order to literally live into the next moment or the next day or the next week. So something that was so much a part of our survival, just as a species, how do we all of a sudden stop that?
Your DNA doesn't dictate your life. It gives you perhaps a predisposition one way or another. But you always have a choice. And the basic focus of the book is that mindfulness allows you to create a space between internal and external events or stimuli and your reaction or response to those. And it's in that space wherein lies your freedom and your ability to live a life that's much happier than one dictated by your DNA.
You have referenced mindfulness, and you certainly talk about it in the book. Now, clearly you are not a clinician. So from your perspective as a non-clinician, what does mindfulness mean anyway?
Well, I'll give you the classic definition or a classic definition by Jon Kabat-Zinn, and then I'll give you a little bit of my additional interpretation of it.
Perfect.
The classic definition is paying attention in a particular way on purpose to your present moment experience without judgment. And so that's basically a commonly used definition. An additional little color to the definition that I like to say is it's paying attention on purpose to your present moment internal and external experience without judgment, with openness, and with curiosity. So you're able to see things more clearly and able to select the wisest intention and action for your future happiness.
When you say to look, as many people do who talk about mindfulness, the idea of being focused on the moment, being aware without judgment, is really hard for so many people. The judgment piece is something that we almost tend to do automatically, some much more than others. But when you insert the concept of curiosity, which is certainly one that I use very often with my clients, curiosity really opens you up, and it almost makes judgment, if not it does make judgment impossible when you're about the business of being curious. There's no space to blame and shame and judge.
Right, and that's why I've added, when I talk about it to people, openness and curiosity. The without judgment is a very, very sound way of describing it. But as you say, our nature is to judge. In part, our nature is to judge to determine whether or not there's a saber-toothed tiger there, or whether it's a warring tribe just outside our door waiting for us, right? So, but that's why I think adding the openness and curiosity are sort of like positive features that, as you very accurately point out, makes it practically impossible to judge.
I'm curious. You have been, I just described you as a trial lawyer. Lawyers, people in the justice, quote-unquote, system, part of their jobs is to judge. So help us understand how you, as a lawyer, as a trial attorney, are able to use the lack of judgment in your life.
Look, there's no problem with judging. Judging is very important. We have to make wise discernments.
Okay.
As to all kinds of things, both when I'm sitting in a courtroom and trying to decide how I'm going to cross-examine a person, and in my life. When I decide what kind of an exercise program I'm going to have and how hard I'm going to stick to it. So there's nothing wrong with making judgments. The problem is when you do it every single second, and you're not fully aware of the basis for your judgment or the intention with which you're carrying to the judgment, that's the problem. And so that's why when I think of mindfulness, I think of it as kind of a two-part thing. One, it provides clarity so that you can see things without a bias, or with as little of a bias as we possibly can have, so that you can then apply, you can call it judgment, you can call it discernment, you can call it whatever you want, but the ability to select a wise intention in that moment that is responsive to the stimuli that you're being responding to, rather than reactive based on habit or a fixed pattern of judgment.
You're using words that suggest choice on all kinds of levels. And indeed, you say in 40 Things I Wish I'd Told My Kids that one is not stuck with whatever thoughts arrive. We can change them. So again, to those who are saying, how can I change the thoughts that come into my head? They're just there. I have no control over them. What do you say to those folks?
Well, that's really what mindfulness is all about. It's about recognizing that thoughts are going to come into your head. You don't have necessarily control over those thoughts. It's like your mouth. It produces saliva. Try to stop your mouth from producing saliva. You won't be able to do it. You'll have the same result if you try to keep your brain from producing thoughts. You can't do it. But what thoughts you choose to pay attention to and what thoughts you choose to honor, and then what thoughts will stay in the arena of your mind, are all choices that you have. You just have to develop the capacity to do it, and develop the capacity to recognize that you in fact do have a choice.
It sounds like you're saying that everyone, no matter where they come from, no matter what they look like, no matter what their life experiences are, they do have the gift and the power of choice, which is extraordinary. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. It's just as much a part of our being as judgment or breathing. Not accidentally breathing. We all have the ability to make those kinds of choices.
There's something for some folks, I would suggest that there's something wonderful and freeing about that, but there's also for some folks something perhaps kind of unnerving and overwhelming. If I have a choice about the thoughts that I have, my goodness, I might have choices about a whole bunch of things. Now what do I do?
Well, that's what life is all about. It's discovering what your own unique set of capabilities are, and in my view, what gifts you have to deliver to the world, and then acting to develop the capabilities you have and deliver those gifts to the world.
The idea that we, each of us, has our own unique gift to deliver to the world in our own unique way is, I think it's a lovely thought, it's a powerful thought, and for many people it may actually be a new thought.
Yeah, and I didn't say gift, I said gifts, because each of us has a wide variety of gifts. And, you know, some we may not be able to develop or deliver to the world at a particular point in time in our lives, because there's other things that we have to attend to. But there's always a certain number of gifts that we can deliver to the world. And it's, you know, our job to figure out what they are, cultivate them, and deliver them.
I am delighted that you corrected me from gift to gifts, in part because, you know, some people often have a sense of seeing themselves really as so much smaller than they are, so much smaller than their capacity is. So thank you for that correction.
Well, look, it's a big part of the book, and it's, I mean, there's one chapter in there where I talk about that, you know, I'm never going to be a professional basketball player. I mean, I'm never going to be. At one point, that was like the major goal of my life, and I thought it would be the gift I could give, okay? But I'm 5'9", and I can't jump, and now I'm 62 years old, so I'm totally out of that game. But a lot of people cabin themselves and focus on, oh, I have to be a piano player, or I have to be the world's best comedian, or I have to be something. And they foreclose the opportunity of developing all kinds of gifts they have by limiting their scope. And therefore, they deprive the world of a lot of benefits that they could deliver if they just broadened their view and chose some aspects of their current life that they really could develop very easily or more easily.
John, in terms of looking at your subtitle, some of it I get, some of it not so much. So mindful messages about success and happiness, I got that. Leather and pickles, you got to help me out with that.
Okay. Each of them requires a little bit of an explanation because they involve a story, but not very much. So we'll take leather first.
Okay.
So there once was a king in a kingdom long ago before the invention of shoes. And his young son, the prince, went out and walked around the kingdom and on a path stumbled on a root that was sticking up out of the path. And the other foot landed on a rock. And so he severely hurt both his feet. And so he came back and the king said to one of his ministers, "Get the armies out. We're going to go through the whole kingdom and we're going to pick up every rock and we're going to clear every root so that when my young prince walks around the kingdom, he won't ever have any pain or harm come to him ever in his life."
Wow.
And so, the minister said, I don't think that's going to work because, first of all, there's too many paths for us to cover with the army that we got. And also, by the time we get done picking up all the rocks, more are going to pop up. And by the time we get all the roots cut, more are going to grow. Why don't you get the prince to get some leather and construct some perfectly fitting coverings for his feet? And that way he can go out on the pass, and if he encounters rocks and roots, they won't hurt him as much, if at all. And he won't have to worry about looking down the path as to whether there's rocks or roots. So the story is a little bit about, is exactly about the way Western society lives their lives versus a potentially wiser way of living. We spend all our time trying to imagine what problems and pitfalls are going to arise, how we can avoid them, or how we can not do things that would allow us to be put in the position of experiencing them. And we spent essentially no time creating the internal strength and capabilities that would allow us to weather the problems that for sure will arise. And we spend no time developing those capabilities. So that's leather.
Tell me about pickles.
Okay, so pickles, so you get up one morning and you've got a couple of kids and you get up a little late, they get up a little late, you rush downstairs, you're in a big hurry, so you're not thinking mindfully or moving mindfully. You're making their lunch, grab the pickle jar because you want to put pickles in their lunch. You take it out, put the pickles in, and then when you put the top of the jar back, you don't put it on correctly. It's, so to speak, a jar. And so it's cracked and not totally solidly on. But you don't notice because you're not acting mindfully. You put it in the refrigerator. 2 days later, you come down, same thing happens. You're in a rush. You go to grab the pickles. And of course, you grab it by the jar cover, you take it out, and it smashes on the floor, and pickles everywhere, glass everywhere. You rush around to clean it up, run out to school with the kids. Next morning, you come down, and you're in your bare feet because you're again rushing, and you know what happens, right? You step on a shard of glass, and you find yourself in the emergency room. So what has happened here? What has happened is a lack of mindfulness at a particular point in time creates negatives as a direct result of your failed intention, your intention to hurry as opposed to your intention to be mindful. And so that's really the notion of karma, that, you know, if you have a unwise intention, it's very likely to lead to an unwise action that will then have unwise implications in your life. But the other thing the story illustrates about karma is you always have the opportunity to change. And in this little story, an unwise intention and action in the first instance, putting the thing on a jar, wouldn't have had any impact at all on the person's life if the next time they grabbed it, they weren't in a hurry and noticed that it was a jar, and they wouldn't have smashed it, and they wouldn't have ended up in the hospital. So the thing about karma that everybody thinks is, you know, you get what you sow or something like that. But the other thing that nobody thinks about it is, you can always change your karma. You always have the opportunity to approach things with a wiser intention, and the chances are, not guaranteed, but the chances are you'll get a more healthy result, and therefore a more beneficial life. So that's pickles.
So it sounds like these are both wonderful examples of the health of mindfulness that can actually spur you on to more creative things, safer things, just in terms of your spirit, and things that will help others.
Yes. I mean, the basic, or at least my basic premise about mindfulness, is that mindfulness will naturally lead to a happier life. Your body, when you cut yourself, you may need to put a Band-Aid on it to keep the germs out, but the body heals itself.
John, where do we go to get more information about 40 Things I Wish I Told My Kids?
Well, we've creatively named the website 40 Things I Wish I Told My Kids.
Wow.
And so it's very creative. So if you go on there, you'll find a homepage that has a variety of information. You'll find a page on mindfulness and education, which has some very interesting information, including a PowerPoint presentation on basically the history of it and a link to the Sea Change website. And an author's page that has some a series of very short videos discussing some of the topics actually that we talked about today.
So lots of information at 40thingsiwishidtoldmykids.com.
You got it.
John Alcock, thank you so much for joining us today and for walking us through some of the 40 things you wish you told your children.
It was really fun. I really appreciate it, and I had a great time.
I am delighted to hear that. And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you may choose to do with a mental health, medical health, or other professional. Remember, you can always listen to Mind Talk on demand by going to mindtalk.org. I'd love to know where in the world you're listening today, so do send an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. You take care. Thank you.